Hello, and welcome to a MomsFightingAutism.com conference. Our conference theme is Get Educated About Autism. This conference is co-sponsored by AutismCollege.com. I'm your moderator for this session, Chantal Cecile Cura. I'm the author of numerous books on autism and also the founder of AutismCollege.com. And right now we're going to be having a session on creating a communicative environment. And it is my great honor to introduce to you Darlene Hansen. Darlene is a speech and language specialist with an expertise in working with individuals with severe communication impairments. She's the director of communication services with WAPEDA in the LA area. Darlene has been working in the field for 22 years. Her work focuses on bringing alternate modes of communication to those who do not use speech to communicate effectively. Currently, she is focusing on training the communication partners to increase communication. At WAPEDA, they provide speech and language assessments, therapy and training, as well as services related to augmentative communication. This is available to families as private clients and to school systems through the non-public agency status. Trainings and coaching are available locally throughout California and out of state. You can read more about Darlene on www.darlenehansen.com. Darlene received her Master's of Arts from Whittier College and her Bachelor's of Arts from Chapman College, both in communication disorders. She is also recognized as a Master Trainer in Facilitated Communication and has participated in the writing of the Standards of Best Practice for Facilitated Communication from Syracuse University and has co-authored research on authorship for facilitated communication. Welcome, Darlene.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So Darlene's topic today is creating a communicative environment. Everyone communicates, we just have to listen. This session will talk about how we, as communication partners, can create materials, displays, opportunities, and an environment that promotes communication for those with severe communication impairments. We will talk about how we might move beyond making requests to taking turns, sharing ideas, and connecting with others. And I have to say, Darlene's an important person in our lives because those of you who listened in earlier and heard me moderating with Nancy Brady, who is an inclusion specialist, Darlene is, and well, WAPEDA actually was the agency that was hired by Jeremy's high school district to provide services at the school district to help with Jeremy's communication and inclusion in towards getting his high school diploma and being included in the school environment. So thank you, Darlene.
Thank you.
It's all yours.
Okay. So hello, everyone. And, yeah, today I wanted to talk about creating a communicative environment. A big theme that I hope goes through the next hour and a half here is the fact that especially when we're talking about augmentative communication and autism, there's a little bit of a difference in giving augmentative communication to someone with autism versus someone, the persons with the different kinds of disabilities that we've done in the past where we've given augmentative communication to them. And I think the difference lies in the fact that for many other individuals, for example, I'm going to use the example of people with cerebral palsy, when you give a device to them, their communication thinking and the way they socialize and things is very similar to the way speaking people do. So you give the device to them, and, yeah, you have to problem solve all the technology and the access questions. But once you do that and you're successful with that, you're going to see a person using a device. They have to learn the device, but they learn it the same way that everybody else would kind of learn it. When we give this kind of equipment and think about augmentative communication to someone with autism, yes, it's technology, whether it be low-tech or high-tech, but we also have to think about the fact that a person with autism has a communication impairment. They communicate differently, and that isn't because they don't have speech necessarily. It's because they think about communicating with us, and they interact with people in a different way, and that still is true when you give them augmentative communication. So I think when we don't include the fact that we also have to still support the communication disorder, we tend to think, oh, he doesn't benefit from technology. He's using it as a toy. Well, that's because he has a communication impairment. so my goal today is to talk about what are kind of some of the red flags and the ways we have to support the communication impairment as well as supporting the technology, whether it be low-tech or high-tech, when we're talking about creating a communicative environment. So our first slide is talking about the environment. And I'm not sure for the rest of you, I'll just kind of put this out there, but on my computer, I don't have the right QuickTime thing going on. So there are supposed to be photos there, and if you don't have photos, I apologize. I personally don't know how to fix that part. So I'll tell you what the photos are if you don't see them on yours. Hopefully you do. When we talk about an environment, we can use the environment to create opportunities. So when we're talking about using augmented communication, you have to have an opportunity to communicate. And yes, basic wants and needs, of course, are opportunities to communicate. But if you only ask somebody or prepare somebody to talk about things as a basic want and need, somebody with autism I'm talking about, then all you're going to get, at best, is a person who communicates about their basic wants and needs. For somebody with linear thinking whose system for development of language is not very integrated, we don't see generalization unless we promote generalization. So it just can't be assumed that if I give you vocabulary, you're going to start generalizing it and using it socially. So we have to create the opportunities. So you think about, what I'm saying is think about opportunities that are more social, not just basic wants and needs. Of course, do those first, because otherwise you get a very frustrated person. But beyond that, you're going to have to create opportunities within your family. So my first picture here is of a family having dinner. And that's to remind us that what do you guys socialize about in your family? What do you talk about socially in your family? You want to make sure that your person has an opportunity to participate in that. And we'll talk about vocabulary and things like that in a few more slides here. But
I don't see the photos on my screen either, so it must have something to do with the upload, and I'm really sorry.
I'm sorry about that. So the opportunity, I'll hopefully describe the pictures to you. So opportunities to communicate would be things like socializing in your family, maybe in a classroom setting, you know, making sure your guy gets to do that oral presentation through technology maybe, but he gets to do that. We've used things like you can use a cell phone, kind of a situation where the aides in the background or in the back of the room prompting your person. If your person has limited verbal communication and just needs prompts, you can prompt him remotely. And maybe he's given the verbal presentation that way. If he's not verbal, he's using PowerPoint. You can even have a friend or a sibling do the audio for the PowerPoint, but he's pressing the slide, so he's engaged in the activity, and he's prepared the activity. That would be the goal, too. But that's another way to make sure there's an opportunity that way. You don't want to just assume that your guy only wants to do basic wants and needs, and that he's going to socialize because he can do his basic wants and needs. Nobody's talking socially about the fact that they need a break or they want a cookie. That, of course, they should do that. But that's not social, okay? So that's our job, to fix that and to work on creating those opportunities. The other thing that I think impacts our environmental stuff, which is the second picture that we can't see, is turn-taking. So two people talking is the photo, two young toddlers. So turn-taking, we have to assume that I take a turn, and then you're supposed to take a turn. And we have to sometimes work on teaching the person. We're throwing it back to you. You're supposed to say something back, okay? We'll talk about this a little bit in a few more slides as well, but you want to make sure the person has an opportunity to make a comment, to ask a question, okay? So I'm throwing it back to you. Sometimes we have to teach that. We have to say, when I stop talking, it's your turn to say something. Or I'll say, I've been talking a lot here. What do you think about it, okay? I have to promote that turn-taking. Now, some people, especially people with autism, don't like the imposition of us interacting in their activity, whatever that might be. So the turn-taking is actually almost annoying, okay? So sometimes we actually have to make that more of a goal, that he's going to deal with the fact that we're imposing a question on him. But if that's what you're dealing with, that you're saying, oh, gosh, my guy doesn't like me talking to him, then that's where you need to start. You need to start making goals about accepting turns and accepting this.
We do that with our husbands, too.
And we should do that with our husbands sometimes as well. We need a response back. And Chantal and I go on for hours about this. So turn-taking is a big, big deal, I think, in giving a piece of technology to somebody with autism. Otherwise, they do look like they're just going to use it as a toy. So we can't just assume that that's because he doesn't know what to do with the technology. It's more, I think, because he doesn't know how to communicate with us, and he still doesn't know how to communicate with us. So we still need to work on that, using the technology as his means of output. The other piece on the environment is thinking about what are the topics that you're generating or you're promoting versus the requests. So I have a slide here, and for teenagers and such, it would be things like current events like pop culture, things like People magazine. Okay? Talk about that. Read a story with your teenager. Sports Illustrated would work just as well for a boy who likes sports. But, you know, read something about nature, whatever, and then give your input. Okay, say, gosh, I never knew that about dolphins. Or, I can't believe Miley Cyrus is doing this nowadays. Give a comment and then throw it back to your person. Okay? Teaching, however they're responding, they should be expected to respond back. Another picture here is a picture of my daughter in cheerleading. Sharing about yourself, I think, is important. Oftentimes we, as the communication partners, just get into the interview mode. And so, and that's not normal. We don't walk up to people and just start talking to them, asking them questions. We tell them a story. So tell them a story about yourself. You know, this weekend I got to present on a web conference, and it went however it went, you know, and see what they say back. Okay, so share about yourself before you start doing the 20 questions. Because otherwise that's not how we talk to anybody. We shouldn't promote that as the way we talk to people who use augmented communication or people with autism. So the fifth picture in this part is about interviewing. We got to remember that an interview is 20 questions. Okay? That's not a conversation. What did you do last night?
It's interesting. It's a really good reminder about finding materials that are age-appropriate or that the person is interested in, because a lot of times, since they don't request things like that, we don't think to offer them things like that, and so then we forget to get them, you know, more interested in reaching these kinds of goals by using things they would be interested in. So, like, for example, Jeremy loves music, and I don't know that about music, but he's 22, so we got a guitar magazine because he's really into guitars, and then we got Rolling Stone magazine, which is great for us because we like that anyway. But there's all kinds of topics that have to do with music in there, and then he can actually choose which things he wants to read or have read to him or wants to talk about, because the point is that we don't naturally just have information to share sometimes, you know, especially when you live with somebody, you got to have new information. So it's a really good point, and starting with something that they're interested in, not what you're interested in.
Well, and starting with something that is interesting.
Yeah.
So we tend to, especially for any of us who are the educator people, and, you know, I've fallen into this trap before, you know, we tend to say to people, well, what did you do last night? What did you have for dinner? Who did you have dinner with? You know, did you watch a movie? Well, that's not a conversation. That's an interview. And where are you going with it? You know, so if you did go to the movies, talk about different points of the movie. Gosh, you know, Nicole Kidman did such a great performance in The Rabbit Hole, but I thought it was kind of a strange storyline to be, you know, wasn't that big of a deal to me. You know, whatever your opinion is, share it. They're interested as well. And as you start to do that, you'll see the person will stay with the conversation a little bit longer, too. If you make it boring, it just is that. It's just boring. Okay? Okay, I'm going to move on to the next slide. And that is the systems. Okay, so we have an environment. We talked about that. So you're creating that environment. Now you got to think about, what is the system that my person has to communicate? Now, of course, there can be nonverbal communication and things like that, and that's very good to use as well. But today I want to talk more about the stuff that we have to create so that we can create the communicative environment. So what counts as a vocabulary? What counts as a communication material? And how about a system of your own? That's what we're going to kind of outline here. So when we think about vocabulary, we tend to just think of, oops, something funky's happened on my screen here. Did that happen on yours as well?
I'm going to check right now.
I just lost my slides. Hang on.
Oh, I still see slides here.
I don't know where they went and why they left. Hang on.
I'm going to turn
it back. Okay, it's coming back.
We have vocabulary and we have pictures.
Yes, hey, good. That's what you're supposed to have. Okay, I don't know where it went or why.
Sometimes.
Okay, so good. So vocabulary. When we do, I'm not picking on PECs, but I'm just thinking of PECs because that's a standard that most people with autism are going to be offered up as their initial mode of communication in special education if you're not verbal. So when we think about that, we tend to put vocabulary that are nouns, and then we start to put the request phrases in there, so the I wants and the I sees or I haves or whatever, or I needs. But primarily they're pretty concrete things, okay? Now, if you don't include or then expand to, if you just keep expanding noun vocabulary, all you're going to get is requests, or you're going to get, I call them sound bites of information. If you don't put in some verbs, some adjectives, some questions, some comments, you're not going to get those back, okay? They don't have a means to get that back to you. So if you're creating a communication system, you want to create it to include some questions. Just a simple card that just says, you know, what did you do last night? Or what do you think of that? Or that's awesome, a comment. Or I can't believe you, another comment. You know, whatever is socially appropriate in your community or for your child's age frame, whatever, you can put those in there. But if you don't put the questions and the comments in there, you can't ask them from the person, and the person's not going to get the idea that he can even offer it up. So we need to do that. So we have to think about what kind of vocabulary are we setting the person up with before we start saying he's not generalizing. Okay? The next slide is thinking about materials. Oftentimes, I mean, we'll talk about making sure you have your own system, but communication materials are available all the time in all of our environments. So yes, you can have a textbook. That's communication material, okay? But so are the picture cards, or so are the number boards, or so are the math manipulatives, okay? Whatever you're working with, if you're a teacher, whatever materials you're working with, whatever, if you're a parent and you're doing homework, whatever materials you're working with to participate in the homework, those are communicative materials as well. So don't just think I can only talk about things that are in his communication book. Even if you're using text, that's not all the stuff around you is communicative, okay? You know, pointing to the things in the house that are being requested, going and getting something, that's another material. Those are important to reinforce communication, and they shouldn't be slighted, okay? If you see a person constantly having to go get his shoes to tell you he wants to go out, then maybe he needs a picture in his book or on his display that says, let's go, all right, so that he doesn't have to go get his shoes. So you can start taking those kind of hints from your person, yourself. Materials like if you're in a classroom for a little kid and you're using puzzle pieces, those are communicative, you know. If you're using the iPad like many of us are right now, yes, ProLoquo2Go is a great app. And there's other ones that are communication. Those are great apps. But so are the kindergarten.com ones that are working on comprehension. So are the ones that take you through a trip through a museum. Okay? I got some yesterday that were, one was called GeoWalk, and I can't remember the other one, but they're apps that have a little paragraph underneath it and then have a little video clip of animals Well, pull that up. Now I'm reading you this little clip. You're watching the clip. I'm reading about it with you. Now we're going to talk about it. Okay?
Cool.
And that's all communicative. All right? That teaches the person that they can be resourceful as well. It's not just about what vocabulary do you have in your line drawings. Okay? My ultimate favorite and always useful standby is a dry erase board. So if you have a dry erase board, you can create a communication board right there in the moment. You don't have to be a great drawer. If your person knows how to read single words, you can use that. It's a material. Pull it off the refrigerator and use it. Make a yes-no choice board. Make a do-you-want bananas or apples for a snack board. Again, if you keep having to say, do you want bananas or apples, then you should put that in his book. But you have materials around that we oftentimes aren't recognizing and aren't promoting because we're so focused on the fact that he only gets to communicate when he uses his textbook. Okay?
Right.
Does that go on, Chantal?
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah. We're all enjoying this. Go right ahead.
All right. Okay, so the next slide is communication systems. So now you have, visualize this, you have all your materials out, you have all your materials, you've identified them all in your home, in your classrooms. This guy uses this to communicate. I have a guy that will, cut out pictures in newspapers of things that he wants to purchase, and he puts them in his pocket. He's resourceful. That's his communication, all right? So I know that that guy is resourceful, and I also know that he loves to buy books, for example, okay? So he's always going to find a picture of a book. Well, then I'm going to want to create a system that allows him to communicate more efficiently and have it as his own so we can start working on initiation and such, okay? So on one hand, I'm saying use the materials and use the environment the way you want to in your home and encourage that or in your classroom. But when you start to be doing the same thing over and over again, those things need to be in a system for the person, all right? So I see a little bit of a difference between a system and just using materials. So, again, most common system for people with autism up until the iPad came on board were the textbooks, all right? So you have your textbook. And now whatever vocabulary that person always wants to say should be in the textbook. But then we have some more high-tech and even low-tech systems of communication that we can use. And one system that is the handheld things. So that would be like an example of the Say It Sam with my example. Say It Sam is made by Words Plus. It's in the kind of casing that we would have our old PDAs in, like a Casio kind of a PDA casing. And it would be like the size of an iPhone, maybe a little bit bigger. And the casing would have a nice speaker on the background, on the back of it, so that you can hear whatever's being said. So, and that has a preloaded software that then you can create a custom display with, okay? These are nice for people who want to wear something around their neck, for example, because it is something you can wear around your neck and carry out on the playground and such. They tend to be pretty durable in their casings and things, so they're good for people who might toss it or drop it or bang it into a swing set or whatever. They're a little more pricey, so a Say It Sam could run anywhere from $3,200 to, in the handheld one, to $4,500. I don't know exactly what the current pricing is on it, but something like that. So it's going to be a few thousand dollars on a Say It Sam. Another option, though, if somebody types, which can be used as a system, would be a word processor like the Fusion. The Fusion is an example of a word processor that has built-in voice output. You can send through infrared the information typed to the computer and print it out and edit it and things like that or save the documents that way. It saves automatically, but at some point you're going to want to start transferring things over to the computer for yourself. So the some people, I write reports where say that the fusion or the word processor is his communication system, okay? That tells everybody that if you want to be talking to Joe, you need to have his fusion out, all right? Now, the fusion does not take pictures. It only uses the QWERTY keyboard, so you need to be able to type if you're going to use the fusion. Another example of a tablet kind of a size thing would be the Maestro, from Dynavox. And that's a little bit heavier, a little bit bigger than the iPad, but similar in design. Again, having the Dynavox software on it. It's pretty portable. It's not something I would want to carry around with me all the time to communicate. And a little person would not for sure want to do that. But sometimes if it's remote communication and you're an adult person, you just might want to do that. It has a nice speaker system, and it's considered more high-tech. You can do pictures or line drawings or typing on that. It has some of those, like setting kind of things, so it looks like a bathroom. And then you can point to the toilet to say, I have to go to the bathroom. So it gives you a little more context cues. Both the SAM systems and the Dynavox systems, and I think the Prinky Romic as well, have those. And then another thing that can be used as your system, of course, would be the iPad. And the iPad has apps that are communicative. If you go to, on the last slide, I'm going to show you our website slide, address rather, and when you go to that, our website, I have a list of what I have as apps on my iPad, plus more, and I try to keep it updated, but I haven't updated it real recently, but it does have most of the communication ones that I'm using on a daily basis on there, so you can download the app list if you need. Then there's a bunch of them floating around on the Internet as well.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
Okay, a couple people have asked some things. One person asks, how do you spell WAPEDA?
Okay.
How do we spell it? So maybe you want to tell them now if it's not going to be up on the screen right away?
Okay, and no worries, it will be on at the end. But it is W, A as in apple, P as in Paul, A as in apple, D as in Darlene, H as in horse, and then it's .org.
You might just want to explain what WAPEDA is. I mean, what it started from and what the name came from.
Yeah, it's easier to just know it as WAPEDA, but it actually, we started the organization 45 years ago. And it was before special education was available to individuals with significant disabilities. And so it was a kind of like a PTA. And so it is called Whittier Area Parent Association for the Developmentally Handicapped. We're pretty progressive now, so we have this old-fashioned name for a pretty progressive group of people, but we can't think of another way to lay out the acronym for WAPEDA. So we don't change it. That's it. We have adult services and have had adult services for these 45 years. And now in the past 2 years, we've been doing communication services as well. So that's who WAPEDA is.
That's great. And here's a question from Carol. It's Carol from Houston. What are some good apps for the iPad to encourage communication? And also,